Blog Talk Radio.
There's a line in that song that I used to kind of chuckle at. Well, you're terrific if you're even good. I wish that were still the case as far as, the culture of cinema. I really do wish that we would overvalue just being good. Instead, well, here we are. This is Damn You Hollywood, and I'm Robert Winfrey, and tonight we are discussing The Fate of the Furious. The eighth installment into the Fast and the Furious franchise. Oy. I don't have a bit. I'm not feeling physically my best. I think I ate something yesterday that did a little number on my stomach. Alternatively, the popcorn my brother served me at the movie theater when I saw this thing was laced with something, and I do not put that past him at all. Or it was just movie theater popcorn, and I should have known better. Answer there. And then there was this movie. Mark, I mean, we talked a little bit about this offline, but I do need to get this out in the open. Are we going to have another Transformers discussion, for want of a better example? Because
no,
I'm not sure I have it in me.
I'm not nearly as passionate. First of all, I stand by everything I said about Transformers to this day. There was not a gimmick there. There was not a bit. I stand by everything I said about Age of Extinction. And for those of you who have been listening to us bring this up ad nauseum on this show, ever since we actually did the show, we will rebroadcast our Age of Extinction review during the week of Transformers week here on the Rattlegion Broadcasting Network. We will rebroadcast that show along with our subsequent review of The Last Night. And you can hear the passion, the fury of our thoughts, of our review of said movie. But for us to reach that level of vim, of vigor, I would have to be as passionate, if not more so, about this movie, and I'm just not. Of all the movies that I have seen this year, Robert Winfrey, The Fate of the Furious is absolutely one of them. That is to say, I came, I saw, meh, I went home. I mean, I enjoyed it while I was watching it because, and we know this about me, I take this on the chin. I know this. Ooh, stuff blew up. And I am amused like a child who's you're ringing keys in front of. I am amused by shiny things. I am amused by things that go boom in the night. But when it's over, it's like a lap dance. It's fun while it's happening and imminently forgettable when it's over. And that's what The Fate of the Furious was to me. It was a 2-hour-plus lap dance. So no, Robert Winfrey, we are not going to have an Age of Extinction-type discussion because I just don't give a hoot.
We're going to come up with a better metaphor for this, I swear. And also that metaphor about the movie is not one I can necessarily relate to.
Lap dances? Is that what we're referring
yeah.
to? Conor McGregor.
Oh, don't.
Here's what I had
just,
to say.
Just don't.
Here's what I had to say about Conor McGregor. When asked the question, don't you think he should compete for the welterweight title? I said, look, belts don't matter. Belts are props. In this world of ours, in this modern age of circus fights, belts are props, and he's already over without one, which is the kind of thing you say about a professional wrestler. Like, say, Dean Ambrose doesn't need a belt. The belt is a prop. He doesn't need the prop to get him over. He's already over
Dean
with
Ambrose
the crowd.
Dean Ambrose is dead.
AJ Styles is over without a belt. He doesn't need a prop. And it's a weird thing to say about a professional fighter where these belts are supposed to be an accumulation of importance and championship material. But the way they've been used and abused in the UFC, they're no more – they're as much of a prop as they are in the WWE. And as to round this back to Conor McGregor, he doesn't need a prop. He's already over. He already sells. He's – at this point, giving him a belt is just jerking off. And how that relates to the Fate of the Furious, it doesn't. I just felt like it needed to be said. Your witness.
Alrighty. That's about all I got.
You asked for a bit, you got one.
Look, I regret many decisions in my life, and that is one of them.
Already? Wow.
Some regrets are instantaneous and fleeting. Others are deep-seated and will cripple you emotionally for the rest of your life. This is the former.
It's good to know that within moments of dealing with me on a podcast, I can bring you instant regret. These are the things I strive for.
Hey, I still enjoy the fact that I basically broke you with hand puns when we talked about Iron Fist, so I'm good.
You know, it's a rare treat indeed where you delve into Silly Winfrey. So I'm willing to be broken by Silly Winfrey because, you know, like Haley's Comet, it only comes around every couple of hundred years.
Haley's Comet comes around every 76 years.
Couple of hundred, whatever.
Now, Hail Bop is a couple of hundred. Haley's is much more reliable.
Hail Bop, do-do-do-do-do-do-do, Hail Bop, do-do-do-do-do-do-do, Hail Bop. Eh?
Ladies and gentlemen, I've made so many mistakes with my life. I really do need to publicly address that. All right. I mean, normally this is before I do the plot synopsis bit. We do a little
plot.
Bit of, you know, what did you expect kind of going into this movie? I mean, it was on the schedule because it's a big event. We talked about last, you know, when they came out with whatever, 7 last year. And we had positive and negative things to say about 7. I think a little bit more on the positive side, all things considered. So it was always going to be on the schedule.
Hang on. Let's not run away from the obvious. We you know, the entire reason we're reviewing this movie, you see. Hang on. God damn it. This would have been a funnier bit if I had actually been prepared.
They usually are, but then it wouldn't be us. Look, neither of us are prepared here.
Okay, as I was saying, the entire reason we're even reviewing this movie is quite
here
simply...
Here comes the money!
Here we go, money talk.
Here comes the money! Money, money, money!
Dollar, and when we get to the money, boy, is there a lot to talk about. I mean,
it
when
really
we
isn't.
Said... When we said at least 2 movies before the summer will hit $1 billion, and one of them is going to be this one. We weren't joking. There was no hyperbole there.
No, it was this and Beauty and the Beast that were surefire. They're going to hit $1 billion.
Dude,
I might have been a little reticent about this one, but...
This thing nearly made as much as Logan's entire run so far in one weekend. What the fuck, man?
Look, there's a reason that most R-rated movies don't make as much money as lower-rated movies, because you're restricting the audience by definition. There were freaking kids in the audience for this. I wanted to smack a couple of them.
All right, so,
because
where
I'm a terrible, terrible person.
All right, you were asking what were the expectations, right?
You personally.
Question.
Well, that's usually the bit, but neither of us seem to care a whole lot about this thing.
Welcome to Damn You Hollywood. Who gives a shit? No, I'll
we have those episodes. Look, we put stuff on the schedule. Some of it you're passionate about. Some of it I'm passionate about. Some of it's there because, well, it checks all the boxes, so why not?
Some of it ends up on the schedule because...
Here comes the money!
Here we go.
Stop
money
that.
Talk.
Here comes the money.
Fun with buttons. My expectations were the following. I expected Cars to go vroom. I expected Cars to go bang. I expected Cars to go boom. I expected the actors to do adequate acting jobs. I expected The Rock to be amusing.
About half of them did that.
I expected Jason Statham to kick lots of things. I expected to be entertained. This movie met my expectations. I was entertained. Like a lap dance. A lap dance is entertaining. And then imminently forgettable. I know so. I am an expert. I am a connoisseur of lap dances.
And also about to be an ex-husband for the second time, I would imagine.
Hey, Melissa. Do you care that I'm a connoisseur of lap dances?
No.
She says no. I'm safe.
All right. My apologies. Only one failed marriage.
What was that, Melissa?
I don't think you're a connoisseur.
Oh. So now she's disagreeing that I'm a connoisseur.
I imagine aficionado or enthusiast might be a better word.
Would aficionado or enthusiast be a better word?
Yeah,
she's willing to go with enthusiast. Let's run with that. I am a lap dance enthusiast.
Fair enough. I will. You can add that title to right after the LCSW at the end of your name.
Right in between your old pal Wheezy and the Mandated Reporter and Frankly I'm Mortified?
Pretty much, yeah. I will start introducing you that way. All right.
I got more.
Again, Mark
Muhammad
expected
Ali
to be entertained. He expected to mentally regress to the state of his, 2-year-old son and enjoy
three,
the experience.
He's three now.
Three. My
he's
apologies.
He's three, goddammit.
Okay, he's three. Freaking, you get you people and your insistence that time is linear relative to our space next to the nearest object of sufficient gravity to affect it. I don't get it.
All right, then, Neil Tyson Degrassi.
Personally, look, I've seen all of these movies. If you want a more detailed examination of my thoughts on each of them individually, feel free to jump into the archives and find the 2-parter Long Road to Ruin series that Sean Comer and I did on The Fast and the Furious leading up to 7. A lot of fun was had. But these aren't my cup of tea. As a general rule, which is fine. That's not necessarily an indictment on quality. It's purely personal taste. There are good things about almost all of them. I can't say anything good about 2. Except for the indestructible yacht. Because I've gotten so much mileage out of the indestructible yacht. But other than that, no. And 4 was... ugh. Yeah, 4 was kind of a mess. Anyway, so I had, no expectations going into this. I was worried when I saw some of the previews because, look, and I've said this before on this show, I know entirely too much about how things are supposed to work to enjoy a lot of film. Now, I've really tried to ratchet that back as far as legitimate criticism goes, because it's an action movie. And in any action movie, like, nothing works the way it's supposed to. Bullets are stopped by the smallest of things, like a car door or a sofa. Seriously, there are movies where a character will hide from gunfire behind a sofa, and the sofa will stop bullets. If you have a BB gun, maybe. Ugh. But anyway, point being, in action movies, bullets are stopped by things that they're not actually stopped by. Explosions are survivable. Gunshots, stabbings, all these are eminently survivable under less than ideal circumstances, when in reality, yeah, no. And I know this, and I try my best not to go, ah, it's an action movie. This should have, you know, operated under this set of circumstances, when it's not a fair thing to say. That being said, I think we can all agree that there comes a point when you nuke the fridge, right? And I think this is it for that, for this series of movies. I think this is finally the point where we have just gone so far into the absurd that, I mean, personally, I just, like, I'm done. I am just kind of done. All right. Let's go ahead and do my plot synopsis. We open... I don't want to get into a big editing thing right before I do this, because I've been really trying to keep this... You know, again, I'm going to tell you what happens, and then we can do the bits where we talk about them, and I can yell or praise as necessary, and Mark can yell or praise as necessary. But Mark got on me a while back for essentially sneaking in extra thoughts during my plot synopsis, and I was, so I've really tried to curtail that.
Yeah, no extra thinking around here.
I imagine that is the... That is just like plastered on the on the wall of every floor of oh so many office buildings.
No extra thinking.
Such as Titan Towers.
We don't cotton to extra thinking around here, bud.
So, but the fact that we open this movie with a whole, like, 7-minute bit that is just eminently cuttable. I mean, it serves no purpose. It serves no purpose. Other than maybe setting up like an eighth of part of a gag later in the movie. It's... I mean, I appreciate the homage to the Jerry Spinelli classic story that every, like, fourth, fifth, and sixth grader has to read Maniac McGee when he beats the guy by driving backwards. And I also have to say this. Your transmission can't do that. Okay?
Oh, here we go.
No.
Fucking
you want to drift.
Wizard.
You want to spin around. You want to survive a rolling car crash. You want to jump out of vehicles that are going entirely too fast for that to be survivable. It's an action movie. I'll shut up and deal with it. Going from 70 miles an hour in a straight line to spinning around and throwing your car into reverse, it does such terrible, terrible things to your car. It should never be attempted by God or man. Anyway, we open with Dom, Vin Diesel, on his honeymoon in Cuba with Michelle Rodriguez. And they're screwing around in Cuba. They're at a street race because Vin Diesel attracts these things like, I mean, flies. I don't understand this, but everywhere he goes. I mean, hey, he beat everyone all across Asia, so he found a street racing group in Kathmandu, Nepal, I imagine, so good for him. Engages in said street race. Eventually wins.
You said Kathmandu.
It's a city.
I know that. Still funny.
Also the name of one of the first Simon's Cat cartoons on YouTube, which is hilarious.
There are certain, look, as we all know, and we learn from Garfield comics, there are certain names that are just funny. You know, Sheboygan, Walla Walla, Washington, Kathmandu.
So you're of the crusty school of comedy, where it's not dirty words, it's words that sound dirty.
That is correct, sir. You are correct, sir.
Like Muckluck.
When did I turn into the Ed McMahon of this fucking podcast?
We take turns as Ed McMahon. Of course, that means the other one is
okay.
Drunk off his ass. Johnny Carson is severely overrated. He was never that good.
Ooh,
now that I've pissed off
said,
every 50-year-old listening to this. Anyway, engages in pointless street race, wins pointless street race because Vin Diesel doesn't lose street races. We get to the actual meat of this whole sequence. He is accosted by Charlize Theron and recruited. She's a cyber terrorist, you see, not only by her handle. And boy, oh boy, am I sick to death of Hollywood not knowing how both hacking and computers work. I really, this movie just, oh, so much of it. Anyway, she shows him something on a phone.
Hang on. I'm going to yell shut up at you. Shut up. Because you haven't sat through four seasons of fucking Arrow where, you know, Felicity Smoke.
Yeah, because I'm not
random...
that much of a masochist.
Felicity Smoke randomly tapping on the keys of the keyboard and as she hacks into everything but the kitchen sink. Okay? Until you've experienced that agony, shut up with all of you face.
I don't need to have a compound fracture of the femur to know that it hurts, Mark. Nor do I necessarily have to stick my leg into a vise that says this will place leg here, expect compound fracture. That's all Arrow is. Ugh. Anyway. Sorry, I'm in a mood tonight, guys. I apologize profusely.
You really are, Saucy Pan. My goodness.
Yes, my salt level is a little bit irrationally high here. Entirely too much sodium chloride. All right. Anyway, he is accosted by said cyber terrorist, Charlize Theron. She shows him something on a cell phone. He gets all serious face. Which is like one of three Vin Diesel faces. So that's unfair and a shot I don't need to take. My apologies. He gets serious faced. And she then begins blackmailing him into working for her. We cut to Luke Hobbs, Dwayne Johnson. Probably the best thing about this movie apart from Jason Statham. As he coaches his daughter's... What?
Jason Statham and a baby.
Yeah, that bit. The best part of this whole movie, which ought to tell you how low the bar is as far as I sit, from where I sit. Anyway, we get to Dwayne Johnson, who is coaching his daughter's soccer league. Because, hey, why not? He's a good dad. Anyway, he gets recruited by one of his superiors to covertly retrieve an EMP device and immediately made me want to throw something else. Because... You people clearly we need him to get something. Well, EMP is a pretty fun buzzword, and electromagnetic pulse is a fun thing, but there's no way to actually generate them. Sort of a massive release of energy, something akin to a nuclear blast. And shut up in your face, we're writing a movie here. Don't make me get Michael Bay back in here, and we'll have the conversation again. Ugh. Anyway, so he recruits Dominic Toretto and said team. That also includes Tyrese. I want him to die so much. His character, not him as a person.
Oh my God.
Anyway, they successfully steal the EMP, but it turns out that Charlize Theron really wants it. So she has Vin Diesel wreck the Rock's car and steal it. And he goes to jail for about 20 minutes. After turning on, his entire group, he takes off in an airplane with Charlize Theron, which is every red-blooded heterosexual male's dream, I imagine. And they are all mopey because he turned on them. The Rock is in prison across from Jason Statham, where they can trade barbs of the verbal variety. Their chemistry is, again, pretty much the best thing about this movie. And again, they're trying to figure out what went wrong. Kurt Russell shows up with Scott Eastwood, gets The Rock and Jason Statham out of prison by causing a riot. I mean, really, do we have to cause a prison riot? These are unpleasant things.
Quiet riot. I want a riot. Quiet riot. Riot on my own. Riot. Sorry.
It's all right. Anyway, they then recruit the remnants of their team to try and now track down Dominic Toretto and Cypher, Charlize Theron, because, well, they're bad people, you see. And they all want to know what's up with Vin Diesel. Long story short, When Vin Diesel thought that Michelle Rodriguez was dead. Oh, one second. You don't care if I spoil anything for you, right? All right. My brothers are in the room and one of them's going to see the movie. I just wanted to make sure. Anyway, when he had a relationship with Mrs. Thor, the actress is married to Chris Hemsworth. So, Mrs. Thor. She was pregnant, and now he's got a son, and Charlize Theron has no qualms about killing said child if Vin Diesel does not acquiesce to her demands. Which is fine, she's an evil bitch. I'm okay with that. She is trying to... Her character is in some way so poorly written. Sorry. She wants to... Now, then the next part of her devious plan is to steal nuclear launch codes from the Russian defense minister. Which is entirely too easy, even all the trouble they go through. Which then results in them, one of the dumbest things I have ever seen on screen, they mass hack every car in a specific, like, 2-mile radius in New York City that can potentially self-drive, and then use them to dogpile the Russian defense minister's vehicle so he can't escape. Vin Diesel is able to acquire these nuclear codes. There's a bit of a to-do as he has to escape his other team. There's running gags about Scott Eastwood being, you know, Kurt Russell's junior assistant. They escape with the nuclear codes. They track them to a abandoned, what was it he kept saying? It was taken over by insurgents, a submarine base in, you know, the north of Siberia. There's a big action piece because Charlize Theron wants to use those codes on a nuclear submarine to then hold the world hostage. I mean, again, elements of this are not made clear. Everyone shows up. There's another gigantic action set piece where they engage in multiple car chases. People fight. Things blow up. While this is all going on, Jason Statham and his on-screen brother, forget the actor's name now.
Luke Evans.
I like him. Luke Evans. I like Luke Evans. Who survived not only his fall from a speeding plane in the sixth movie, but woke up from the coma that he was clearly in the seventh, and the tracheotomy he had to undergo clearly had no adverse effect, as he's still able to talk. Seriously, there's things. Anyway, Statham and Evans land on the plane, proceed to murder people. And in the best scene in the entire movie, Jason Statham rescues Vin Diesel's son. His ex-girl, again, Mrs. Thor, they had her killed at one point because you can't actually have the potential drama of him dealing with the mother of his child and his wife, and it's easier to just kill somebody than deal with, you know, actual emotional consequences and logistics.
Oh, shit, baby mama drama.
So, anyway, she dies. Jason Statham rescues his kid, and again, best scene in the whole movie. He's got the kid in a bassinet type thing, and he proceeds to go on a murder rampage through this airplane while holding this thing. I've carried those. They're not light. And he And he frequently interacts with the baby. And again, the best part of this whole movie is this scene where Jason Statham interacts with the baby while murdering people on an airplane. Charlize Theron escapes. The sub is stopped. The nukes sink to the bottom of whatever this port is. Vin Diesel reunites with his son. His wife is okay. His wife, Letty, is okay with it. Vin Diesel, as the producer of the movie, nixes the opportunity to have a spinoff with Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham and their characters moving on into other things. And we set up for some, yet again, inevitable and overly complicated sequel that will come out in April of 2019. Man, I don't know where to even begin with this thing. I really don't. Well, Mark is doing a producer thing, so I will keep talking. All right. Again, if you couldn't tell from my tone of voice and some of the things I said, I'm not personally a fan of this movie, which is not the end of the world. I'm not a fan of a lot of things. Doesn't mean they're bad. I really struggle to come up with a really, really positive things to say about this particular movie. Okay, and Mark's back. All right, Mark. We got a caller. Jeez, I suck at this. So do you want to do that first?
No. Well, that's what I was just doing. I was just screening the caller. He actually wanted to talk about moonlighting. What was the name of the
Moonlight.
The one that won the Oscar? Moonlight, not moonlighting. That was a television show. He wanted to talk about Moonlight, and I was like, nope, we're just doing the Fate of the Furious tonight. So I actually wasn't going to take that call.
Okay.
Because he has not seen the Fate of the Furious, but he can listen all he wants.
Okay.
All right, as for what I thought of the movie, here's the deal. As I said, I was entertained. I'm going to go through a couple of things I liked, a couple of issues I had, and I'm going to call it at that. I don't want to belabor these points. The action is obviously the thing that attracts you to these movies. You're certainly not going to them for the high drama. All of the action sequences were fun to watch on some level. The beginning street race was fun, even if it wasn't physically possible. I don't care. I'm not a car person.
I'm not a car person either. I just know that you can't do that.
It's fantasy. It's as much fantasy as Guardians of the Galaxy, in my opinion.
Guardians of the Galaxy is so much more grounded in reality than this thing.
Oh, all right. My point being that as long as I was visually entertained, I wasn't going to sit there and it didn't bother me too much. I enjoyed the shit out of the prison riot scene. I was actually like headbanging to the music. You know, I was smiling. I was giddy. I was on the edge of my seat. You know, watching The Rock and Jason Statham interact with each other, there just needs to be more buddy cop movies with those two. Just continually write them more movies. They are great together. The action sequences where they're stealing the EMP and then subsequently where they're driving through the city and then at the end where they're dealing with the sub, those were all visually stimulating. They're the best parts of the movie. They're the only reasons to go see this thing. Here's the issue with all of that. Like I said, you're either entertained by that sort of thing or you're not. And once you've sort of seen it, it's like, okay, well, that was a thing that I saw and it's over now. None of which had a lasting impression on me. I kind of forgot about it once the movie was over. So it's one of those movies where while I'm watching it, it's good. But when it's over, it's like, just kind of meh, kind of forgettable. Here's where the movie has some problems. And that is everything having not to do with the action. First of all, Charlize Theron, who is an incredible actress, probably one of my favorite actresses going right now. She is phenomenal. Sleptwalked her way through this part. I'm not entirely sure what her directions were from F. Gary Gray, but I'm pretty sure it went...
Stand here, say line.
I was going to say, he either didn't give her direction or her directions were... Could you just whisper all your lines? Could you say them like you're half dead? How about if you...
You see, we're trying to further get across the point here that you're an emotionally detached, intellectual ice queen. So if you could never have an emotional inflection in your voice and keep it very flat and monotone, that'd be just great.
I mean, this is a guy that directed Straight Outta Compton, a movie that was wrought with emotion, and he chooses to direct a character with zero emotion. I've seen more emotion in the Terminator movies, from the Terminators. So there was that. I mean, she was – you might make the argument that she's a compelling villain in the sense that she has an idea. She certainly has a certain chemistry with Dom. But it's detracted by the fact that she's just a raincoat. She's just sort of there. There's that.
I really wanted an author of all your pain moment because it comes out a little bit later in the movie that no, she's responsible for hiring, Owen and Luke Evans from Six, which led to, Jason Statham trying to kill them in Seven, and now I killed your, you know, the mother of your child, and I'm going to kill your baby. I clearly dominate. I mean, I almost wanted, you know, my father sabotaged your dad's race car back in the day, right? I am the author of all your pain, Dom.
It would have made for a better movie. However, it also would have made for a better movie had she used, I don't know, inflection. Here's where the movie, here's the biggest fault of the movie. This whole thing.
It's written by a
first
year screenwriter.
Standpoint. I'm going to come to Utah punch you in the tit, in the male tit, Robert Winfrey. I'm going to punch you in the male tit. Now, if I could finish a sentence, sir.
My apologies. Go ahead.
The movie, the drama of this movie rests on one single point. And because it doesn't work, it kind of fractures the movie. And that is this. This whole movie turns on Dom turning on his family. That was the big non-action-related set piece. That was the big non-action-related attraction to this movie is, oh, no, here's the guy whose single biggest personality quirk, his single part of his personality is defined by his love and his perpetuation of family. And in this movie, Dom turns on his family. I don't know why I'm doing the Vince McMahon voice as done by Bruce Pritchard, but bear with me here. He's going to turn on his family.
That's how it was pitched in the writer's room?
Probably. He's going to turn on his family. Chocolate titties. Anyway, so Dom's going to turn on his family. That's the whole thing. And if he doesn't execute that turn well enough, the whole movie just kind of falls flat, which it does. Because here's the thing. And they almost wrote themselves into a corner with this, with this aspect of his personality. Because I've only seen one of these movies, and I already know that his whole thing, his whole gimmick is, the Dutch is more important than your family. I am Groot. Okay, we got it. It couldn't be any more simpler than that. And yet, when he makes this turn, nobody really believes he's turned on his family because they know that it's the most important thing in the world to him. There has to be something else. Like, he didn't just up and turn evil one day. They realize he's being manipulated. He's being forced to do what he's doing. He's being held against his will. And they just need to get to him and save him from whatever treacherous clutches have made him turn against his family. But not really turn, and that's the point. He doesn't really turn. This would have been stronger if he wasn't being hornswoggled into it. If he had, like, legitimately, and not through mind control or some stupid shit like that, like, legitimately had come to some sort of point with his family, with Letty, with somebody where he could not stand to be with them. He had to be apart. He had to be against them for whatever his motives were. If he truly believed what he was doing was right and it was against what his family was doing, that would have made for a stronger movie. Instead, I'm going to kill your baby if you don't steal a thing from me. And then the whole time he's working against her. So that whole thread, which is the major spine of this movie, falls completely flat and is fractured. And for me, that largely took away from my ultimate enjoyment of this thing. So all that's left is vroom, vroom, bang, bang, boom, boom. Other than that, Michelle Rodriguez, I don't know. I guess there's been some movies where she's acted well in. Off the top of my – I think, wasn't she in Million Dollar Baby?
No.
Okay, who am I? What has she been in that she's been good in?
Because my opinion, I can't think of anything. Hang on.
Okay, well,
I will look up her
filmography.
Continue making your point.
Michelle Rodriguez can only act so well. Tyrese yells all of his lines. Ludacris is ludicrous. And then the only thing you've got left is the performances by Jason Statham and The Rock, who carry the rest of the film. And that's really all I have to say about this. It's a great movie when there's action happening. It's a great movie when The Rock and Jason Statham are doing stuff on screen, and the rest of it is kind of shit.
There is nothing.
Okay. Michelle Rodriguez, not strong enough to be a leading lady in any movie. Can we stop putting her in that role? That poor child.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, so there's my review of the movie. Are you happy? Are you going to yell at me? What's going on here?
Oh, I forgot to mention one thing that is another kind of highlight of this movie. Helen Mirren.
Oh, she's great. I forgot about that.
Yeah, Helen Mirren shows up for a couple of scenes as the mother of Jason Statham and Luke Evans. And is
not for nothing, but her scene and the baby and the escape with the baby from the airplane, two best parts of the movie by far.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with your assessment as far as the writing goes. I could go through this, and there's a couple of points where, again, this is an action movie. I'm willing to suspend so much of my disbelief, right? Even though there's part of my brain screaming at me the entire time, that doesn't work that way. Generally, I can suppress it. I can placate it with Cherry Coke, one of my favorite things in the world. I can placate it with Cherry Coke and promises of chocolate-covered cinnamon bears. And it will shut up while I suffer, because I don't need to suffer while being yelled at by half of my brain. Then there are movies that just go too far. And this movie really, and I mean, again, look, I was willing to go along with even, you know, the end of 5 when single-handedly Dominic Toretto is able to defy the laws of physics and smash a pursuing police squad from his car while dragging a physical vault. All right. And
I did see that one. That's the one in Miami where they're dragging a vault through the street. That's hilarious, that movie.
It's Rio, not Miami, but yeah.
Yeah, close enough.
No, it's not.
Sure it is. Miami, Rio de Janeiro, same place.
Sorry, my aneurysm just ruptured.
You're welcome.
Thanks for that. Again, there's a couple of things about this that just you've clearly now gone too far in over, you know, this doesn't work this way for me to not say something. Again, first of all, the hacking. I don't know why Hollywood writers just refuse to, you know, learn even the most basic things about how computers work, but they do. They just refuse. They are ostriches about this. Now, you know, Wi-Fi can be affected by the width of a tree that you're standing next to. Stick their head in the sand and go, la, 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 I can't hear you. They can do anything I want. They are my magical bullet to solve any flaws in my writing. They did it with a computer. And hacking an entire city, thousands upon thousands of cars, and then compelling them to drive themselves. I mean, it's just too much. You have just now gone too far into the realm of stupidity. And why? Two other things about this. Everyone who talks about, the nuclear codes on the briefcase, and we have to, you know, not destroy them. You can't let them get into the hands of the enemy, and so on and so forth. That's never the full thing. Never. It is half. It is always half. It is never the full thing. And someone please explain to me why, when, you know, buried in cars, as they were, and threatened by Vin Diesel, who's trying his best to look like, oh, that guy from Lucha Underground. Matanza, that's it. When trying his best to look like that, why is it that the first of all, the actual defense minister isn't the one saying, no, we can't possibly let nuclear codes get into the hands of terrorists. This is a terrible thing. It's his, like, junior secretary who's the one who actually has them handcuffed to him. This is all ass backwards. And then they give them up when Vin Diesel threatens to blow them up. You clearly do not understand how any of this works, and you're just playing on tropes. And then the Siberia scene.
Hang on. Let me ask you a question. As you're sitting here bellyaching about how things like this don't work, how many of the average audience members do you think know that nothing works this way or care?
I don't
More
know.
Importantly,
not
care.
Enough.
How about none? How about zero? How about everybody that went to go see this thing, including myself, went to go say bang, bang, doo 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 zoom, vroom, 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 bang, bang, here in my car, na 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 na, vroom, vroom. That's what everybody went for. And a few of them went to go look at the Rock's penis. Okay? That's
which did
literally
not make
the attraction of this. Literally the attraction of this movie is bang, bang, zoom, vroom, 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 here in my car, vroom, vroom, bang,
so would
bang,
you prefer I go
penis.
Into just how, like, stupid it is and how poorly set up the action sequences driving through New York were then? Would that work better for you?
Yes, please.
Can we do one of these without jump cuts and shaky cam? Because, really... the cars driving themselves out of that parking garage, too. Just, I'm sorry. I can only take so much bad CGI. And I don't know why that one stood out to me more than any of the other instances in this movie. Such as, you know, Vin Diesel driving a car that's literally on fire. But for some reason, that one did.
Okay.
That whole Siberia scene...
was great.
No.
You know what my favorite part of that was? The cars all gathering around Vin Diesel like a mother hen protecting her egg from fire, from a giant fireball. Apparently fire can't penetrate car.
You know, believe it or not, I'm okay essentially with that because, again, stupid action movie, explosions are eminently survivable.
Sure.
But there's a few things about that whole sequence that I'm not okay with because you have now just, again, passed anything that is reasonably approximating even the reality of a dumb action movie.
All right, I'm gonna edit you. I'm gonna produce you, okay?
Okay.
Robert, the worst three offenses for the entire Siberia sequence, soup to nuts. Go. Top three.
The submarine is in dry dock. And then inexplicably in the water 5 minutes later. They don't even show it going in the water. It is literally up on stilts being retrofitted. And then because it... We wrote this sequence where it chases them under the ice. Well, now it's in the bay.
Seems legit.
Ugh.
Number two.
The distance covered by Vin Diesel's supercar. Because he jumps off of the edge of the lake in his big spectacular returning to save the moment after violently murdering a sniper. Which I'm fine with, by the way. And he proceeds to then jump into the middle of this channel. All right? No. Just no.
Okay. And the number one most offensive thing in the Siberia scene, go.
We can completely steer and control this submarine that was in the process of being retrofitted by computer from an airplane on the other side of the planet. I have read, watched, studied entirely too much about submarines over the years to believe that that actually works that way. Well, we're going to have a chase in with a submarine. Okay, you should have a crew on it. No, we'd really rather not kill any more people. okay, they'll hack it and control it remotely. This is not how this works. Shut up, we're writing a movie. No, you're not. You're writing explosion porn. It's not actually a movie.
Quiet, you.
All
right.
Okay, hang on. Very briefly, best things, I think we touched on those. Again, Jason Statham in The Rock, Jason Statham in The Baby, Helen Mirren, because Helen Mirren's awesome. Yeah, again, I was not engaged by any of the action pieces in this movie. Just none of them.
Okay.
I was bored. I alternated between bored and wanting to throw something at just the sheer stupidity.
I really wish we could go see these movies together and just felt...
No,
like,
you don't.
I am the worst
person to see movies with.
No, but that's my... Shut up, you face, first of all. Second of all, but that's the whole point, Mr. Winfrey. Mr. He Who Must Be Punched in the Tit, the male tit. Because the whole gag is filming you and me watching the movie. As I'm sitting there jumping up and down in my seat like a child, and you barely holding together your lunch. I can imagine it would be wildly amusing to people to see these two disparate reactions to the same stimuli. It's like a science experiment gone mad. Mad, I tell you. It's a mad, 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 mad world. Anyway, anything else?
I have something, and this pertains not just to this movie, but for some reason it really stuck out to me in this movie. Much as I hate to call it this because I love the series of games that this phrase is based on, I'm referring to it as the Uncharted effect. See, in the series of games, again, they're all called Uncharted. They're great games. There's four of them, planning some spinoffs, but there's four of them. They are truly spectacular gaming experiences. I love them dearly. I own all four of them. I've played all four of them, some of them more than once. So, they are universally loved. They are great games. But for some reason, when I was playing through, I think it was the fourth one, I finally came... No, it was the second. It was the second. I came to the realization that there's a pretty serious flaw in the logic of their universe in many ways. And that is that you as the main character, and again, video game, there's puzzle solving, there's adventuring. If you enjoy games, these are, like, great. They are just phenomenal games. Can't recommend them enough. Part of this is, of course, combat, usually of the gun variety, and you kill people. Throughout the course of a game, you'll take out a small army. And I'm not complaining about this, mind you. But my gripe comes to, I go from, you know, happily wiping out mercenaries to, oh wait, this character had dialogue written for them. Clearly I am suddenly rendered impotent. This character betrayed me, shot me in the stomach, and left me in half of a train that was hanging off of a mountain in the Himalayas. Actual thing that happens in those games. And the next time I see him, my response is not shoot him in the face 5 times. I got a problem with this. Like, this guy clearly already betrayed you, clearly will do so again, but no, you can only kill the faceless, voiceless, not voiceless, but you know, the mindless grunts. Them, mow down. This guy who we actually kind of wrote for, no, he's going to stick around despite everything about your character and how you have portrayed them leading up to this point being that, meaning your reaction would be shoot them in the face. I got a lot of that same symptom in this movie. Jason Statham, supreme badass, violently murders the small army on the plane. Gets in a room with Charlize Theron and rather than just shoot her or stab her, talks. And then lets her escape. And I imagine a big part of that was also because, well... You know, we're still very conscious about domestic violence, and we're not really comfortable with a movie trying to appeal to the most people possible that has Jason Statham violently murder a woman. But all these faceless grunts.
I was going to say, the obvious answer is they're using her in the next 14 movies.
I don't care. I care that you have a character who has been set up through the past 2 movies, and actually part of the third of, you know, the one before that, as a violent person who kills people. in essentially cold blood or combat. Either way, he is not above or all that hesitant about ending your life. And yet, suddenly, I am hesitant about ending your life because plot shield.
Yes.
And it really has started grating on my nerves.
Oh, pish posh.
Again, if a different character is in that same position, one who is not prone to murder, I have no problem with how that plays out. I really don't.
Okay, so
so
if it's The Rock, basically.
Yeah.
So if The Rock is
in the Rock
same
is in
scene,
there, he threatens her, she no-sells it, she escapes, and he curses. Because that's what The Rock does in these movies.
Spoiled again.
Jason Statham, no problem violently killing people. Face-to-face with the one person he has expressly said, boy, I would like to murder her. And, you know, I'm really kind of reconsidering that in favor of badly written dialogue and a setup that allows you to escape quite easily. Through a door in a plane that should not exist, jumping out of a plane at a height too great into inclement weather, over an unknown territory.
So to be clear, your problem isn't that the bad guy got away. Your problem is that the murderer didn't murder her.
Yes.
Ooh, you picky.
Again, no. You have a character who is expressly stated
but
is shown behaving one way. And then
you're ignoring something. But you're ignoring a very important thing here. You're ignoring the basic laws of the once there was a villain who's now a hero. Look, if you have in any movie series, when you have somebody who was once a villain and becomes a hero, they lose that killing, they lose that ability to mindlessly kill important characters.
Which is another stupid thing. Again, if he hesitated killing all the, you know, faceless grunts, that's another story. Again, we have now established character arc. The fact that he goes from, I will beat you to death by slamming your head into this counter, to, you know, go ahead and talk and move towards that parachute clearly positioned on the ground, I find incongruous.
Might I remind you of an old saying that it's actually from the Bible, as I recall. Okay, it's a biblical saying. It teaches us about humanity and our place in the world. And that is simply this. This is why good will never beat evil, because good is dumb.
While a fundamentally true principle as far as most movies go, because boy, we need a sequel, and well, I don't want to write another character because I'm clearly lazy.
Why would you write another character when you have Charlize Theron, who is Hotsy Totsy?
Look, if you're going to arrive at that point, set it up so it makes sense. That's all I'm saying.
Sentiments.
Again, all I want is just a little bit. I'm not demanding, you know, intricate performances or attention to the finest of detail here, all right? If you have a character that's a killer, that says he's a killer, that kills people on screen repeatedly, and has no intervening crisis of conscience or incident forced upon him that causes him to reconsider his life choices to this point, if he literally goes from violent murder with the butt of a gun and whatever piece of paraphernalia he can scrounge off of the plane to not violently murdering someone he has expressly said, I wish to take revenge upon, a problem with it.
Anything else, sir?
Let me think. Yeah, got through that. No, I don't think I have anything else to say on the craft of this movie. I will do my best to forget it by tomorrow. There is nothing memorable. Again, Jason Statham interacting with a baby is the best part of this movie.
It really is.
That's not a joke. That's not a gimmick. Him putting the headphones on the baby and turning up the chipmunks and saying, okay, this is going to be a little bit scary, but it's going to be cool. And double checking with the baby that, no, you're okay? All right, sure. Where's the smile? Ah, there it is. Then turning and shooting someone.
That's a cute baby, by the way. And the baby's reactions, I have to say, I have to give the credit to the director, F. Gary Gray. He captured a lot of great reaction shots of the baby, which made that whole sequence. Yes, obviously Jason Statham is an important piece to it, you know, clearly. But the baby's reactions are what really sell the thing. And with that said, let's get on with this. Here we go. What we all came for. Here come the money.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talk.
Here comes the money.
Let that play a little long that time. All right. The Fate of the Furious has already been profitable. It is probably the – I think this broke the record for biggest debut this year. This thing is already almost more profitable than most of the runs in the entire, like, top 10. On a production budget of $250 million, it's already made $544 million by today's writing. Worldwide, it comes in at number four behind Beauty and the Beast, which has topped $1 billion. Logan, which we said would settle in around $600 million, and it has. Kong Skull Island, which slow start but profitable, $552 million, and then, like I said, shortly behind that, The Fate of the Furious. Number five is still 50 Shades Darker, coming in at a paltry $378 million. And Vin Diesel making his second appearance on the worldwide stage, Triple X, the movie we should have reviewed, The Return of Xander Cage, $346 million. Some Chinese Chinaman movie called Your Name at $332 million. The Great Wall, $332 million. Resident Evil, oddly enough, $312 million. And rounding out the top 10, right before Boss Baby, ladies and gentlemen, the Lego Batman movie. Over on the domestic side, right here in the United States of America, Beauty and the Beast is still the number one movie. Logan, number two. Lego, number three. Get Out, number four. Kong, number five. Split, number six. The Boss Baby, number seven. 50 Shades Darker, woohoo, hubba hubba, number eight, and The Fate of the Furious, $107 million in its domestic receipts, followed by then John Wick. Power Rangers, by the way, coming in at a number eight, number 11 with $80 million domestic. So there you go.
Nothing kind of bombed.
Yeah. They're going to continue to make these movies until they stop being profitable. And as I said, this thing is already, I mean, it took, I think, until this week for Beauty and the Beast to get over $1 billion. This thing is likely to get over $1 billion before the end of April, and there's only 2 weeks left. Universal's The Fate of the Furious fell just shy of a $100 million opening at the domestic box office as it led the Easter weekend charge. However, on top of its North American debut, the film premiered in over 60 international markets, where it brought in a record international and worldwide debut. Really, what else is there to say?
Vin Diesel apparently, as a producer, nixed the idea of a spinoff featuring just Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham.
I'm sure some other producer will sign the two of them up and say, there's money in them there hills, and go for it.
Just saying,
I cannot believe
he knows that those other characters are more integral to the success of this franchise in some ways than he is at this point, and will not let them go off on their own adventures.
So with that being said, we've got 2 weeks of absolute nothing coming out before the summer begins proper with Guardians of the Galaxy, which looks to be this year's third $1 billion baby. If anything else on the money,
pre-orders are in the indicator.
Yeah, and it's also doing well. Obviously, pre-sales, but its pre-hype buzz is also pretty good. I haven't heard too many. I've heard some. I mean, the worst thing I've heard about it is it's not as good as the first one. But I haven't seen anyone say that it's a bad movie as of yet. So we'll see. But yeah, I suspect our $3 billion babies before year's end are absolutely, you know, Beauty and the Beast. Well, that's already over a billion. Fate of the Furious, which I predict right now by May 1st will have already made $1 billion, and then Guardians of the Galaxy. After that, the summer is sort of touch and go. The only other one that I know for sure is going to end up making over $1 billion is going to be Transformers: The Last Night, because all damn movies make over $1 billion.
Oh, I hope it doesn't. Because you and I are going to yell about that one so much.
Wouldn't be Damn You Hollywood if we didn't.
Since we haven't actually really yelled at each other about something cinema-related on this episode, I really did not care for the Thor trailer.
You're an insane person.
Just did not care for it. Did not entice me to see that movie at all. And I've enjoyed the Thor movies. I mean, I'm not trying to be a contrarian here. This is me responding to this particular set of stimuli. I am no longer looking forward to that movie as such. I might be wrong, and I hope I am. The trailer I found off-putting.
Really? What didn't you like about it?
The color palette looks off. It looks like they're just trying to copy Guardians of the Galaxy. The costuming looks stupid. Jeff Goldblum is in it.
All right. Now you're being unfair to the Beaver.
What? Oh, name the last good thing Jeff Goldblum was in.
The Fly.
And how many years ago was that? 20?
Sure. Maybe.
That was over 20 years ago, I seem to recall. It was a mid-90s movie.
Jurassic Park.
Okay. That was 92? I forget the exact year the first Jurassic Park came out.
Silverado.
That's another mid-90s movie. Can you get one from 2000 to now?
Hang on. Let me googly. Let me see here. The Grand Budapest Hotel.
I'm not sure I'll give you that one even.
Let's see. I haven't seen a lot of these. Tim and Eric's $1 billion movie.
Nope. Don't even try. That is awful. It is a terrible thing. Never reference it again. It is exacerbating all of your medical problems just by you viewing its existence.
The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
Nope.
What do you mean, nope?
That was a critical darling. It is not a very entertaining or interesting movie on pretty much any conceivable level.
Does it have to be within the 2000s?
I want one within the last 15 years.
The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Which I've already said I'm not sure I'll give you because of all the other participants involved in that one. I haven't seen it in too long. I can't remember the movie, so. The point being, Jeff Goldblum at this point in time is not exactly a ringing endorsement. And I know you probably de-pantsed wherever you saw this and threw them somewhere when the Hulk came out of that tunnel. I don't care about the Hulk, so he brings nothing to the table. They're actually going against part of their own lore with the destruction of Mjolnir and then Thor not being depowered, since so much of his power is actually derived from the artifact. Its destruction would near permanently depower him. I'm sick of Loki.
Oh, my God.
You asked why I'm not interested in the movie after that trailer. I'm telling you why.
All right. Shutting up.
I am sick of Loki. I'm just sick of him. He is an indictment. More than being an interesting character in and of himself, which he kind of is, He is an indictment on the movies of that entire franchise and their inability to craft anything approaching an acceptable villain. And if we expand that to include the Netflix series, you get a grand total of two more. You get Kingpin and the now deceased Purple Man.
I honestly think look, I respect the fact that it didn't tickle your fancy. That's fine. I don't think these are fair criticisms, though. I think you can frame them as these are things that don't appeal to you, but I think as legitimate criticism, I think you're way off base. They've already established that the movie universe is not the comic book universe. Who gives a fuck that they shattered his hammer and he's still got some power?
No, even within the movie universe.
He still has
He loses the ability to lift the hammer. He loses the powers of being Thor. That's what the whole first movie's about. He becomes depowered and is a regular human.
He was still a beefy guy who could win in a fist fight. Who gives a shit?
Sure, yeah. He was no longer a person who could go toe to toe with the Hulk. And my biggest one is the costuming, which I really feel looks amateurish.
See, I think it's too early to tell. A lot of times they cut these trailers together, and they're not necessarily all the way finished. There's still some touching up that needs to be done, but they want to get some footage out there. They want to get people excited. I'm going to tell you that what's her face there, Galadriel, dressed up as the devil, dressed up as Poison Ivy, dressed up as Rita Repulsa, looks awesome. When she shatters the hammer, I thought that was a great looking scene. You know, the Hulk didn't look completely finished. It looked a little unrendered, but I got a kick out of the, he's a friend from work, you know, and then the Hulk runs at him and he's like, oh, I'm having a bad day. Look, as teasers go, I thought it was fine. I think it's a little too early to judge.
And again, I hope I'm wrong. I've enjoyed the other Thor movies. This one, I am no longer excited. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Are we ready to do this?
Now that we have our violent disagreement, as is required by per our contract, once per show. For the love of... We all know what time it is, right?
We need to recut this. Jesse Starcher, are you out there? We need to cut the Degeneration X, are you ready, into the no thing. That way we can just hit the fucking button and be done with this.
Fair enough. All right. It's critics time, everybody.
No, God, please, no! 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 No!
All right,
hit me.
Here's the problem. I think this bit's going to die on the vine because you already didn't like the movie, so it's like...
So find me positive reviews.
You want me to read you the pot? You don't want me to read you the rotten ones? You want me to read you the fresh ones?
Look, the whole point here is to express that these people are bad at their jobs and to give me an aneurysm. So if we see a movie that's terrible, find the ones who think it's good and let me yell at them.
All right. Tom Glasson of Concrete Playground, fresh review. Despite the major departure from its origins, The Fate of the Furious still delivers in spades when it comes to entertainment.
Again, entertainment is subjective. There's a much better way to phrase that. You clearly fail at utilizing the English language in any sort of professional capacity. Return your paycheck, bash your head into a wall, and find a different profession.
Maria Dzurevic, I should know how to pronounce that. She comes from the same area in the world that I do. Of Cairo 360. The chemistry among the cast reaches its most fluid and entertaining yet. And there's the same sense of fun and unapologetic but aesthetically pleasing action hyperbole at every sharp and screeching turn.
Okay, hang on. I will give you part of the cast being great as they play off of each other. You must have been napping during every time Tyrese opened his mouth. Because, really? No. And Ludacris is kind of an afterthought. in a lot of respects. Oh, here's the other thing about this, and this is going to be a weird statement. If you watch the escalation in all of these movies, right, they go from the occasional car wreck in the first one to nuclear submarine struck by heat-seeking missile, Vin Diesel shielded by a group of cars, right? There is an escalation. There's a world of difference between unapologetic fun and something that is so deeply asinine that the only excuse one can have to defend it is, well, you have to watch it with your brain off. You're encouraging people to eat lead paint at this point to make your product enjoyable is the crux of your argument.
Speaking of eating lead paint, Paul Whittington of the Irish Independent. Absurd, you betcha. But boy, do director F. Gary Gray and his cameramen handle the whole thing well.
No. No, they don't. Again, jump cuts, a bit too much shaky cam, and boy, do we... I mean, this almost felt like the first time the man ever had access to... I forget the technical term. Yeah, like a crane camera, you know, one that can swoop, or a helicopter shot, because he sure does love those. Wait, I've got a budget. Strap this camera to that helicopter. This is how we're shooting the movie.
Josh Terry of Deseret News, Salt Lake City.
I will drive to this person's house and do terrible, terrible things.
Its most impressive feat may be how, for all of its mayhem, The Fate of the Furious still manages to finish with a positive message about family. That's one rule these movies never seem willing to break.
Okay. Okay. Can we start with the fact that all of these movies end that way? Once you get past the first three, all of them.
There's nothing more important than family. I am Groot.
Second of all, I really hate certain stereotypes about people of my faith. One of the things that I hate about them is the stereotypes that I hate. Because it's true, mind you, is the way, the perceived way that we can wedge, you know, family positivity into just about anything. I hate that it's true. I really do. Because it gets grating at times. And I hate that not only is it true, but it is publicly so true about so many things that it doesn't need to be. I understand writing for your audience. I do. And I get that that's why that particular section is in his review. But it's similar to, you know, a Jewish movie review going, well, it was sure nice to see that they were thrifty with the budget. Must we conform to stereotypes to reinforce them? I don't need it. On the flip side, that is an accurate statement, so I can't yell at him for being bad at his job.
Rich Klein of ContactMusic.com. This episode is marginally more grounded.
No, don't even finish. Do not even finish.
No.
All right.
This episode is marginally, take your medicine, is marginally more grounded than the high-flying previous installment, but it's still utterly preposterous. It's also a huge amount of fun, thanks to the snappy cast, you know, like that Michelle Rodriguez and her dynamic acting, and a far larger than life driving stunts.
Okay, this is not more grounded in reality than the others, okay? Sure, the others had the stupidity of airdropping cars. All right, don't get me wrong. That's stupid. But when you understand how things work, that is not nearly as stupid as I will hack 50,000 cars remotely and order them to drive with a modicum of safety, by which I mean they stayed on the streets, to converge on this moving target. Just no. That is so much more ludicrous than, okay, we're going to airdrop our convoy of cars onto a specific stretch of highway. So much more ludicrous.
I like this next one. Rob Vaugh of CinemaStash. Vin Diesel is just fireproof, isn't he?
No, he really isn't. I mean, unless you're making a gag about the number of times he actually rolls through fire in this movie, a lot. I mean, he's had several bombs over the last 3 to 4 years. I mean, this franchise is really keeping his acting career afloat.
Evan Sathoff of birth.movies.death. The series tries to have its cake and eat it too. No idea what he means by that.
Okay, I'm not going to yell at the person for writing that phrase because it might actually make sense. Whoever.
We got breaking news here. We have a positive review from Willy Waffles.
Hang on, let me yell at the edit. Okay, whoever edited that person's review and decided this will be tagline that will get people to click. You clearly are not good at your job. I can't yell at the reviewer. I don't actually have enough content to say, because again, that phrase makes sense and could be used in a context where it makes sense. And I can't say anything else about that, but whoever decided here, this is a statement that could be true under the right circumstances. And that will be my lead. No, just no. All right, Mr. Waffles.
Here we go. Willy Waffles, our favorite reviewer of wafflemovies.com. It's about moments like the opening sequence where Dom is racing a car backwards and while on fire, and plenty of women in bikinis are watching.
Okay, remember when I said that whole sequence could have actually been cut out of this movie? It could have.
Yeah.
If your argument here is that this series is about superfluous scenery, attractive women, bad music, and ridiculous racing sequences that actually serve no purpose to the greater plot, I mean, I don't know what else to tell you other than you can't possibly have arrived at this being a positive thing for this movie. That what you're saying, you know, the best part of it is something that any editing group should have looked at and went, okay, no, get that out of here. This is an entire, you know, millions of dollars worth of set pieces and action and CGI that we don't actually need.
All right. I may have found the one that's going to break you. I feel like after I read this, we're done with this bit and we need to stop the show because I don't think you'll be able to continue. This may be the absolute worst review I've ever read to you for you to react to.
Oh, you're building it up. I like it. I like it.
Alan Jones of Radio Times. Probably the best and most complete thrill ride since Mad Max Fury Road. 4 out of 5 stars.
Okay, I'm I'm going to do something I never do. I'm going to give this person the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, are you?
I'm going to assume that this person has been locked in a subterranean basement, periodically doused with ice-cold water, deprived of several key nutrients, sunlight, human socialization, and light beyond a dimly flickering fluorescent bulb secured behind plexiglass since Mad Max came out. That is the only reasonable set of circumstances by which I can allow that statement to exist. This is an individual who has been so completely deprived of stimuli that he is now reaching back towards the last pleasant memory that he has desperately held on to while undergoing years of captivity. That's all I got. That is all I have. That is how ridiculous that statement is. This person must have undergone extreme mental, emotional, physical duress on a near atomic level to have reached that erroneous a conclusion.
You know, I may not have loved Mad Max Fury Road, but at least I understood what the movie was trying to do. And it certainly wasn't just a thrill ride. It's a woefully underrepresentative review of that movie. And comparing it to The Fast and the Furious is literally like comparing filet mignon to cheeseburger steak. Yes, they're both meat. That's about the only thing they have in common.
I'm going to go that's more like comparing filet mignon to vegan lobster. One is a meat substitute.
All right. Well, this was fun.
How can you possibly be that stupid? Just seriously. How do you function in society on a daily basis? If your
Demetrius Johnson wants Conor McGregor. Demetrius Johnson wants Conor McGregor at 145.
Is that official? Or are you
According to MMA Mania, the headline is Demetrius Johnson wants Conor McGregor at 145.
I think that's about where we need to stop this. I imagine that's at least somewhat erroneous.
I'm sure it's something he said in an interview.
He probably said it on his Twitch stream.
Probably. I didn't click the link.
That's really what we should subtitle this show. Damn you, Hollywood, I didn't actually click the link.
Well, folks, it's been a wonderful wild ride here on the Damn You, Hollywood, in our review of The Fate of the Furious. We are off for another 2 weeks. next week, I've got a TV party in this time slot, Roman Empire, Reign of Blood, myself and Andrew Graham. And then the following week, I've
now,
got...
Now, Mark, you do realize Roman Reigns does not figure into that particular television series, right?
Oh, my God. What you said. Alexis Hena on May 2nd, and I, in theory, will be reviewing the Season 1, the 1998 Powerpuff Girls, because that's what she wanted to do. And then we're back on May 9th, the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, followed by King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, followed by Alien Covenant, followed by Pirates of the Caribbean during our All Pirates all week long. That's the week of May 29th through June 2nd, my birthday. We are doing All Pirates all the time. We're going to be looking at Nightcrawler, Volume 1, Homecoming, Pirates of the Caribbean, Ailstorm, No Grave But the Sea, and TV Party, Black Sail Season 1, and then The Screaming Boy are going to end the week off with a whole show of movie pirates. And then, on Saturday night, that butt pirate, Jose Aldo, will be taking on Max Holloway for the featherweight title. Fantastic. Butt pirate, get it?
Yes, Mark, I was a child during the 90s. Your vague references to homosexuality that are somewhat outdated are not lost on me.
Woo! All right, that's all I got. Here in our car...
Can I just say that the best part of that whole week will probably be Ailstorm? Just going to throw that out there.
Probably. I don't disagree with you. All right, so this is Here in My Car Week, all week long here on the Rattle It and Broadcasting Network. Yesterday on the Source Material Podcast, myself, Jesse Starcher, and the Lorax, he speaks for the trees, Ronnie Adams. Don't ask. We discussed Wacky Raceland, another DC reimagining of the Hanna-Barbera universe. We discussed it. We tore it apart, not nearly as much as we tore apart the living weapon, Iron Fist. But, you know, we didn't love it. I'll tell you that much. Tomorrow night on the Metal Hammer of Doom, we got Zombie Motors Wrecking Yard. Supersonic Rock and Roll. Galactic Motherfucker. Yeah. Love it. And then Thursday I have the unenviable job of prosecuting Dude, Where's My Car? While Sean Comer will be defending it. And then
there's
finally,
nothing good about that movie.
Yeah, but there's nothing really bad about it either. It just sort of is.
There are
two things
really, really bad about that movie. Would you like to know them?
Sure.
Ashton Kutcher and Sean William Scott.
Okay, obviously, if you don't like those two people, and that's kind of the crux of my entire argument, I'll say this much. This is one of those movies where you either like the sort of B-movie shenanigans that this movie readily embraces, or you don't. But then I don't know why you would have watched this movie. Like, who went into this movie not knowing that was going to happen? And again, if you don't like the two main actors, then yeah, this movie's got nothing for you. And then, as I said, Screaming Boy finishes up Here in My Car a week with Famous Movie Cars, a whole show dedicated to famous movie cars. It's going to be fantastic. And then Robert Winfrey's going to get in his car, and he's going to review Cub Swanson versus Lobo on Fox Sports 1.
I hate my life.
But if you don't want to watch that, you can watch Andre Berto take on Sean Porter on Showtime. That's going to be happening around the same time. So lots of boxing, lots of fighting, lots of cars. Here in My Car Week, this week on the Rattle Legend Broadcasting Network. All right, plug away.
No, I don't have it. I if you're the adventurous type, feel free to listen to the latest edition of the 411 Ground and Pound radio show. Skip the first 5 minutes. It's not a joke. It's not
Jesus.
A bit.
What
Skip
the fuck
the
happened?
First. I'm a dumbass.
Okay.
My mic was muted.
Nice. Well done, sir.
So, after the intro, there is dead air for about 4 minutes. This is not a joke. This is not a gimmick. Technical problems, in this case me, not knowing where the mic button is on my new headset necessarily. After that, business as usual. But, seriously, the first, 4 minutes. Skip, it's dead air.
I thought you and Jeff got into, a sissy slap fight or something.
Nah, I suck. That's all I can come up with for that. I suck, skip the first 5 minutes.
Fantastic.
You can read my report on UFC on Fox 24 on... Apparently, 411 Mania had some technical issues. All of the content is there, but now you access it through the domain of 411 Wrestling while they sort out whatever happened. I'm not privy to the details. But it's there, and you can read it if you like. I don't know why you would. I referred to myself once on this show as the Mike Goldberg of MMA coverage, by which I mean I'm repetitive.
Ariane.
No, hang on.
Ariane.
Let me make my point. By which I mean I am repetitive. I have my position because I have compromising information on certain people higher up the chain of command. And everyone you can think of who is better at this than I am is already at a bigger studio doing essentially the same thing.
Not me. I just quit.
Well, you're the who was the guy who came? Who was the wrestler? Blatnick.
Sure.
The guy who actually coined the term mixed martial arts, but apart from that, not a whole lot to offer.
Ooh, that's me, all right.
Yeah, sorry. I'm in a weird place emotionally tonight. So.
When are you not in a weird place emotionally, sir?
Weird relative to what? Let me start off answering your question with that.
All right, everybody. This has been Damn You Hollywood. We'll
you don't have any. Okay. So, no, hang on. In all seriousness, go ahead, read that. I appreciate it. Mark mentioned this coming Saturday, UFC Fight Night 108, headlined by Cub Swanson and Artem Lobov. Artem Lobov sucks, all right? He has his job because he spars with Conor McGregor. That is, his two wins are over guys. Go ahead.
Are you sure it's not Lobo?
I don't get the joke.
It doesn't matter. Just, please. I don't know why I stopped you. Please continue. 1,000 pardons.
So I will have coverage of that again. Either you, I think 411 Mania now redirects to 411 Wrestling. So just, I'll be over there. Hopefully it'll be sorted out by then. You can follow along. You can comment. I appreciate it. I might need help that evening. I mean, that's not a badly constructed fight night card, but I don't know. I kind of have a feeling that might be one of those events. You know, just one of those events where I wind up putting my head into my desk going, why me, why me, why me, why me, why me? And then I remember the giant check that's coming and go, yay! Anyway.
You get a giant check? Wait a minute, when did you start getting giant checks?
Well, I go to the local, my local, like, Staples, and for a slightly disproportionate fee, they will actually print me one of those giant cardboard checks. And I can then, like, frame it in my room and feel better about myself.
Waka waka. Okay.
Anyway, so, again, that coming Saturday, Mark and I are off for a bit. But he already went through the schedule, so we'll be back for that. And, you know, hopefully things, you know, stop sucking. That'd be nice.
Okay. Well, after that lovely outro, ladies and gentlemen, for Robert Winfrey, I am your old pal Wheezy, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, and lap dance enthusiast, Mr. Mark Rattledge. Until next time, be well, be safe, and behave.